The period of the judges was a time of near anarchy. Every man did that what was right in his own eyes, and the nation of Israel had no king. And the book of Judges leaves us with a sense that the problems of the nations might be solved if they just had a king. And that's exactly what the Israelites thought. We go to 1 Samuel, there at the end of the time of the judges, and we find the nation of Israel insisted that God give them a king. The prophet Samuel warned them that having a king would not be quite as great as they thought it would be. And his words indicate to them that the answers to Israel's moral, social, and economic problems were not going to be solved by a king. They were not political problems, but spiritual problems. So the solutions would not come from the top down, but in fact, the kings of Israel would reflect the condition of the people of Israel. And we do well to remember that today. The principle is still true. The leaders of our nation reflect the people of our nation. And the solutions to our nation's problems are not found in the government. They're not political problems. They are truly spiritual problems. And we go to 1 Samuel, and we see that the king appointed, that first king appointed over Israel, a man named Saul, ended up rebelling against God. God rejected Saul, and he appointed another man to be king. And this new king was the greatest and most devout king of Israel. And the events in the book of Ruth take place during the period of the judges. But the book ends with the name of this greatest king of Israel. And so the conclusion of Ruth points us to a king. And it demands that we figure out what this king has to do with the redemption of Naomi. As we saw last week, Ruth requested Boaz to take her under his wings to provide for her and for Naomi. And Boaz then went to the city gates to conduct some crucial business. Boaz desired to redeem Ruth, but another family member was a closer relative to Elimelech, and so he had priority in that matter. And the relative was very interested in redeeming the land of Elimelech, but he was not interested in redeeming the name of Elimelech. And so he refused to marry Ruth. As a result, he could not redeem the land. Boaz then announced that he would purchase everything that belonged to Elimelech, including anything that might have belonged to Elimelech's sons, Mahlon and Chilion. Boaz also announced his impending marriage to Ruth. And so verses 9 and 10 of Ruth 4 are the legal transfer of Elimelech's property to Boaz and is the announcement of his betrothal to Ruth. And in verse 11, the people at the city gate ratified Boaz's actions. They said very simply, "We are witnesses." And that is it's having everything notarized and saying this legal transaction is legal and it's completed. And then they blessed Boaz and Ruth, but they said particularly, in verse 11, right in the middle, "The Lord make the woman who is coming to your house like Rachel and Leah, the two who built the house of Israel, and may you prosper in Ephrathah and be famous in Bethlehem. May your house be like the house of Perez, whom Tamar bore to Judah, because of the offspring which the Lord will give you from this young woman." So there's a lot of pieces to this blessing, but the first part is a desire that Ruth will be like Rachel and Leah, who built the house of Israel. Now, if you remember the book of Genesis, Rachel and Leah were the two wives of Jacob, and it is through them Jacob had 12 sons. Now, I know some of those sons were born to concubines, but the concubines were acting as surrogates for Rachel and Leah. And those 12 sons born to Jacob were the fathers of the 12 tribes of Israel. So the tribe of Benjamin was descended from Jacob's son, Benjamin. The tribe of Gad was descended from Jacob's son, Gad. And so on for all 12 of the tribes. Each one was named after its father, a son of Jacob. And so the blessing that is given here is for Boaz's wife to be fruitful and to build a great household, a mighty household like Rachel and Leah did. And it's a rich blessing. It really, I know our culture typically does not think that children are a blessing, but in this culture, children were absolutely understood to be a blessing of God, and they were considered to be a great blessing. And so they wish upon Ruth many, many children as a blessing to her. And then the second part of the blessing is real simple. It's basically they're saying to Boaz, may you be rich and famous. That's the gist of it. If you're curious, Ephratah is another name for Bethlehem. So it's poetic. They're repeating themselves pretty much. The third part, verse 12, this third part of the blessing is the most interesting. And because Perez was the child born of Judah and Tamar in Genesis 38. And this story of Perez relates to the story of Boaz and Ruth for two reasons. First reason, Boaz is a descendant of Perez. And the second reason, and the most significant, is the story of Perez's birth is the only other record of levirate marriage in the Bible. If you remember, levirate marriage is when one son dies without fathering a child, the other son in the family is to marry his widow and to raise up a child in the name of the older brother. And it's that connection between Perez and Boaz that I think brings it up here. But this is really not exactly the kind of story that you tell your grandchildren or even that you write in a congratulations inside the wedding card that you would give somebody. The short version is that Judah's oldest son, married Tamar. Died without any children, so Judah told his second son, Onan, to marry Tamar and raise up a child in Ur's name. Onan refused to do that, and so God killed him. Judah told Tamar to remain unmarried until his third son, Selah, was grown. When Selah was old enough, Judah promised he would give Selah in marriage to Tamar. Selah grew to adulthood, but Judah did not give him in marriage to Tamar. She remained a widow in Judah's house. And so Tamar snuck into town and dressed up as a prostitute. Judah went to town, saw Tamar, did not recognize her, and he hired her. As a result of their liaison, Perez was born. Now, that's the kind of skeleton you keep tightly locked up in the family closet. Not one you dress up in its best clothes and parade around the streets, like the people of Bethlehem were doing. But the son Perez was an ancestor of Boaz, which made Boaz a member of the leading family of Israel. It made him a direct descendant of Judah. This tribe of Judah was the largest tribe of Israel. And before his death, Jacob had prophesied that the ruler of Israel would come from the tribe of Judah. Jacob also prophesied that from the tribe of Judah would come the Messiah, who would bring peace and prosperity to the nation of Israel. And so this connection to Perez and the family of Judah meant that really Boaz has a name, a part of a great family. And the women of Bethlehem are blessing Boaz with a hope of greatness, like that of his esteemed fathers. Now, not every blessing in the Old Testament is prophetic, but in this case, the blessing given to Boaz absolutely was prophetic. What the women wished for Boaz is absolutely what came to pass. There's one other thing that's worth noting in this blessing is the word house. It's used four times. The house of Rachel and Leah, the house of Israel, the house of Perez, and the woman who comes to your house. And at least the last three usage of this word, it doesn't mean the physical building that Boaz called home. So the house of Israel and the house of Perez are the family and the people descended from Rachel and Leah and Perez. Now what makes this word noteworthy is the uniqueness of the blessing. If you read through the rest of the Old Testament, you'll find that the blessing of the house of Boaz is the first instance of a promised blessing which uses that particular word, house. So there are other promises of blessing, but none of them speak of a blessed house like this. The next instance of a promised blessing upon a house is in 2 Samuel 7, where God promised to David a house. And that's not coincidental, but we're going to come back to that in a few minutes. So we go back to the text. Sometime after the events of verses 11 and 12, Boaz and Ruth got married. Ruth conceived. But that's actually not right, because what it says, look in verse 13, is the Lord gave her conception. It's a huge statement in this book. The Lord gave her conception. This is the very first time in the book of Ruth that God is explicitly stated as working. That God did this. And the author, the narrator of the story, tells us God did this. Now, back in chapter 1, you may remember that Naomi heard God had given bread to the city of Bethlehem. But if you will, that's a second-hand report. The narrator is telling us Naomi heard this. And that's important. Now, I'm not downplaying that at all, because that report of God's intervention in Israel sets us up to see the hand of God throughout the book, the rest of the book, so that we begin to see God working behind the scenes. And we absolutely saw God's providence, his behind the scenes working, when Ruth happened on the field of Boaz. When Boaz took an interest into her and showed her such kindness, when Boaz willingly took her under his wing and promised to be her redeemer, all of that is the behind-the-scenes working of God. And now, though, at the end of the book, the author of the book tells us directly that God did something. God caused Ruth to conceive. Now, the child born of Ruth and Boaz was the result of God's divine intervention, but it was not a miraculous conception like that of Mary. So we understand. In fact, the text tells us that God used the normal means to produce a child. But he worked through that natural process so that Ruth conceived. Now, the way verse 13 is written, it suggests that Ruth quickly became pregnant. There's no hint of a long waiting period here. The author of the book really hurries us along to the birth of the child. Boaz and Ruth marry, consummate the marriage. Ruth gets pregnant. She gives birth. It's boom, boom, boom. That fast in just one verse. And then verse 14, after the birth of the baby, the women of Bethlehem, now speak, and they speak to Naomi. Let me read verses 14 and 15. Then the women said to Naomi, "Blessed be the Lord, who has not left you this day without a close relative. And may his name be famous in Israel. And may he be to you a restorer of life and a nourisher of your old age. For your daughter-in-law who loves you is better to you than seven sons has borne him." So in this blessing, we see Naomi's fortunes reversed. In the first chapter, she declared that God was against her and had taken everything away from her, that Naomi had returned empty. Now the women of Bethlehem rejoice because God has returned life to Naomi through her Redeemer. And that phrase there, in verse 14, that phrase close relative, it's the same word I've been talking about the last couple of weeks, goel. It is that Hebrew word for Redeemer. So that God gave to Naomi the Redeemer that she had been seeking. And this Redeemer would be one who would restore life to Naomi and would care for her in her old age. All that Naomi lost has been found. She has regained a family, security, provision, and a future. In this birth, Naomi's fortunes are completely turned around. That's why these women of Bethlehem proclaim, "Blessed be the Lord." God has done a marvelous thing here for Naomi. But right here, the book of Ruth throws an unexpected twist into the story. I enjoy every once in a while the reading a mystery story with a good twist. If you know what I'm talking about, you know the good ones, they catch you completely off guard. The author tells the story, but he waits till the very, very end to reveal one crucial fact that changes absolutely everything about the story. So that now you have to go back and you have to reinterpret everything that you have read. And we have exactly that same kind of twist at the end of the book of Ruth. Now, since the beginning of chapter 2, our eyes have been focused on Boaz. He's been the hero of the story that we've been looking for. Since the end of chapter 2, we have thought Boaz just might be the Redeemer. There were some difficulties in the way, but Boaz is going to take care of it, and Boaz just might be the Redeemer. And then in the fourth chapter, we see that Boaz does. He negotiates to redeem them. He purchases a land. He promises to raise up an heir to Elimelech. He marries Ruth. He fathers this hoped-for son, so that through Boaz, all that Naomi has lost has been restored. It's no wonder the women of Bethlehem proclaim that Naomi has a Redeemer. Boaz has acted in every way like the gracious kinsman Redeemer. But the Redeemer of this story is not Boaz. Look again at verse 14. So the women praise God because he has not left Naomi without a close relative, without a Redeemer. And then they offer up a twofold blessing. The first part of it is the Redeemer will return life to Naomi, a restorer of life, and will care for her in her old age, a nourisher of her old age. Secondly, her daughter-in-law, Ruth, loves Naomi and is better to Naomi than really a house full of sons. It's seven sons is poetic. It's not literally seven, but just a house full of sons. And it says that Ruth had given birth to him. Given birth to who? You go back to verse 14. The only one it can possibly be is the Redeemer. Ruth has given birth to Naomi's Redeemer. That last phrase changes everything. If it was not for that phrase, we would think Boaz was the Redeemer of Naomi, but Boaz is not the Redeemer. Boaz absolutely fulfilled the role of the Redeemer. But the Redeemer was the baby born to Ruth. And so just when this book seems like it's come to a conclusion, everything is nicely wrapped up, all the problems are solved, and they lived happily ever after, it throws this twist in. Boaz is supposed to be the Redeemer. That's what we expect all the way up to this point. But he's not. Now, we are very tempted to read the book of Ruth like it is a story of two women who are down on their luck and they meet a gracious man who takes them under his wing and he turns all their bad luck into good fortune. So we're tempted to read the book of life, the book of Ruth, through fleshly eyes, seeing nothing but the physical problems and the physical solutions. But if we read the book of Ruth through spiritual eyes, we recognize that the problem Naomi had was not the death of her family and the poverty that came as a result. Yes, that was a problem. But her problem, her great problem, was her deep, deep bitterness against God. She imagined God had forsaken his faithfulness to her. And the end of this book shows us that God had not abandoned Naomi. He had provided what was needed. And he had given her a home and a family and security, all of these things that she had lost. Yes, there's a resolution to the physical problems. But he had provided her more than that. Because what she needed most was for one who would redeem her from her bitterness and her slander against God. Ultimately, she needed a redeemer from her sin. And the book of Ruth ends by telling us the real redeemer of Naomi was not Boaz. And it names this child Obed. And says he is the redeemer. And you might be thinking, okay, cool. Now tell me the story of Obed. It may not be a name you're very familiar with. And there's a reason for that. The Bible doesn't tell us anything about him. I mean, literally, nothing. All we know about him is his name and his family. The text draws a straight line from the naming of Obed. Well, let me read it. Verse 17. The neighbor women gave him a name, saying, "There's a son born to Naomi," and they called his name Obed. He is the father of Jesse, the father of David. What do we know about Obed? Well, his son was Jesse, and his grandson was David. Just at the point where I would be thinking, okay, tell me about this Obed. How is he going to redeem? What's he going to do? We get nothing. We just get his kids. And then it does it again. It draws the same line again, only this time it's longer. So the last five verses of the book of Ruth are a genealogy that begins with Perez, the son of Judah and Tamar, and it goes quickly through a list of names to end with David. Let me read it. Verse 18. Now this is the genealogy of Perez. Perez begat Hezron. Hezron begat Ram. Ram begat Amminadab. Amminadab begat Nahshon. And Nahshon begat Salmon. Salmon begat Boaz. And Boaz begat Obed. Obed begot Jesse, and Jesse begot David. So Boaz is not the ultimate redeemer of Naomi. Obed is the one proclaimed to be Naomi's redeemer, but we don't know anything about him. And in fact, the very end of the book here, the very moment we begin to look with surprise and wonder at this newborn baby that Naomi is holding, our gaze is stripped away from that little infant and it is directed to his grandson. And I think we rightly say from this book that it's not telling us Obed is the Redeemer. Maybe David is. And I think that's where the book actually intends to leave us. Obed's not the one that Naomi needed. Maybe David might be. And we begin now to see the story of Naomi in a new light. This book of Ruth is not about the resolution of Naomi's pain or even the provision for Naomi's needs. Again, that happens. But they're not the centerpiece. They're really not what it's about. The story of Ruth is not about the kindness of Ruth or the compassion of Boaz. The story of the book of Ruth is the story of the birth of Naomi's Redeemer. The story of the book of Ruth is a hint at something or someone to come. And there really is a point where the book of Ruth is not resolved. It ends leaving us hanging. We see the partial resolution of Naomi's physical problems, but the author ends this book in stirring us up to expect something more. And he points us to expect something more in David. And the very next book of the Bible introduces us to David. We see that David is a godly man, far different from the rebellious King Saul. In 2 Samuel, it begins with godly King David being made as king over all of Israel and beginning to secure and to grow his kingdom. And he soon announces his desire to build a house for God. It is really as the peak of David's godly career, because four chapters later, everything begins to unravel. The trouble begins with David's own sin. He committed adultery and then tried to conceal his sin by committing murder. And from that point until the end of his reign, David's kingdom was troubled. Civil war, rebellion, and plague marked the final years of David's kingdom. And David confessed his sin. He repented and was forgiven of it. But the consequences continued beyond the end of his life. And so the birth of Obed points us directly to King David. But if David was the redeemer Naomi needed, something went terribly wrong. Now, before David's sin with Bathsheba, he and God had a fascinating conversation. It's recorded in 2 Samuel 7. But David desired to build God a house. However, God would not allow David to build the temple of God because David had been a man of war. David would not build God's house, but David's son would. And most importantly, God promised David he would build David a house. God's promise is not to build David a nice palace that he can live in, but rather he is promising his descendants would reign in Jerusalem for as long as they remained obedient to God. And God promised that even if David's sons and grandsons were disobedient, that God would raise up a son to David who would reign in Jerusalem forever. So what God promised to build David was not just a great house, but an eternal house. Remember, I pointed out the importance of that word house in verses 11 and 12. Here in 2 Samuel 7, we see that same word being used. David desired to build God a physical structure, a temple, a house. God used that same word to promise to build David a house. It is a promise of a family which would endure forever. In 2 Samuel 7, verse 16, God promised, "And your house and your kingdom shall be established forever before you. Your throne shall be established forever." This promise to build David a house is an echo of the blessing to build Boaz's house. And it is in that promise that God made to David that once again our eyes are turned away. We've been moved from Boaz to Obed to David, and then we get to the promise to David, and our eyes are turned away again, not to his immediate descendants, But rather we're told to look for an eternal king. An eternal king who would come from the line of David. So our eyes are turned off of David to see his capital S, son. The promises that God made in 2 Samuel 7 are promises which find their fulfillment in the Messiah. The son of David would reign forever. And he is also the son of God who would become man. So that ultimately, as we trace this through scriptures, we see that the redemption Naomi needed is found in that great son of David, the son of God who became flesh and dwelt among us. Psalm 72 verse 14, Jim read it earlier, it tells us though that this eternal king on David's throne will also be a redeemer. That Psalm 72 is all about the promised son of David, not Solomon, but the one greater than Solomon. And in verse 14, we read that he will redeem. It's the same word. It's goel. This promised son of David would not just be a king. He would also be a kinsman redeemer. He would reign forever as the promised redeemer, the redeemer promised to Naomi, among many others. So the book of Ruth leaves us hanging. We think Naomi has found a redeemer. But then we discover the redeemer was not the one we expected. And the rest of scriptures resolves the story for us. It tells us that the redeemer of Naomi is her grandchild and her God. He is her son and her savior, her descendant and her deliverer. And the solution to Naomi's bitterness was not in Ruth or Boaz. The solution to Naomi's bitterness was not in a restored family name or in the birth of a grandson. The solution to Naomi's bitterness was not in her circumstances being reversed. The solution to Naomi's bitterness could only be found in her Redeemer. As you read through the book of Ruth, and maybe you go back and read through it now and with a new perspective, you cannot and we dare not walk away thinking the book of Ruth teaches that bitterness is resolved when circumstances are turned around. We dare not think that Ruth teaches us the solution to bitterness is to have a good happen to us again. The book of Ruth points us beyond our circumstances, beyond the uncertainties of this life to a person. Again, Ruth doesn't name that person for us, but we who live 3,000 years later and have the completed revelation of God's word, we know the identity of that person. So the solution to Naomi's problem is the son of David, is Jesus. The redeemer Naomi needed is the son of David born in Bethlehem to Mary. And the redeemer we need is the one who is the son of God and the son of David. He is the one who was born in Bethlehem, laid in a manger, worshipped by angels, adored by shepherds, and honored by magi. The redeemer is the one who lived a sinless life and died a horrible death. This redeemer is Jesus, the one who suffered the scorn of men, endured the torment of the cross, and bore on the cross the wrath of God. And Jesus, our Redeemer, did this because of his great compassion. He saw us in our need and he had pity on us. And we do well to remember that our need is far worse than the physical need of Naomi. We were not just suffering under bad circumstances. We were not sorrowing over tragic deaths. As deep as Naomi's physical suffering was, our spiritual condition is far worse. Each of us entered into this world as a sinner. By nature, our hearts and minds are turned away from God. And we then live our lives apart from God. We pursue our own plans with little thought to what God requires of us. We live in disobedience to Him. We love things more than we love Him. We seek our own will instead of His will. And then because of our sin and our sin nature, we are separated from God and condemned to death. And Jesus redeemed us from sin and death. He redeemed us through His death on the cross. He paid the penalty of our sin. He purchased forgiveness for all of our sin. He has already paid the price for our redemption. And He now waits for you to turn to Him for redemption. He seeks to give you protection. Protection from the wrath of God. He seeks to deliver you from your guilt. Psalm 130 says, "Hope in the Lord, for with the Lord there is mercy, and with Him is abundant redemption, and He shall redeem you from all your iniquities." The glorious promise that Jesus gives is if you will call upon His name for salvation, you will be saved. If you've not done that, will you do so? We see as well in the story of Naomi's redemption that shame, rejection, and abandonment are turned by God to honor, exaltation, and redemption. The family tree of King David contains some really shameful names. I've already mentioned the story of Tamar. Her and Judah's actions were truly deeply sinful. Yet there she is in the lineage of King David and of Jesus Himself. Boaz's mother was Rahab. You remember that story, the prostitute of Jericho who hid the Israelite spies? Ruth was a Moabitess, a member of a cursed and despised people. But out of these shameful and hated lives, God worked something marvelous. Through their Redeemer, God brought honor to them who had been shamed. And the same is true of every one of us, of you in your life. God is able to bring honor and righteousness to anyone through His Redeemer. And when Jesus redeems you, He changes everything. Your past doesn't disappear, but it now becomes obvious that God is working in your past and was working in the past for your eternal good, so that your history now becomes the avenue by which God brings to you that which is of eternal gain. And so you do not imagine, and we cannot imagine, that your family or your history or your life or your sin are beyond the redemption of God. He will redeem all who turn to Him, and He will turn your shame to rejoicing. And the book of Ruth also teaches us to look beyond people and circumstances for our redemption. We are always to look to the God behind the scenes, the one who is behind all events, and we are to trust Him. We're to trust Him for our full and final redemption. And in our troubles, we must not look merely for an ease of difficulties. Look for God. Certainly pray for deliverance, pray for provision or protection or whatever it is that you need, but look for God. Look to see His character revealed. Look to see Him. So that in difficult circumstances, do not be content for life to return to normal or for your problems to be resolved. Far too often, we want God to make our life better, but we don't give much thought to God Himself. Far too often we pray for help. We do not pray to know God or to know him better. And the solution to our problems are not found in a better life, more income, better health, a more sane family, or a good job. The solution to your problems is God himself. So that your greatest need is not strength or money, rest or security or comfort. Your greatest need is God. And the book of Ruth points us beyond the physical problems to seek God, to seek him first, and to strive to know him because he is your Redeemer.